This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
I want to welcome Josh Simon to the show. He is the founder of Simon CRE, Commercial Real Estate. He has an amazing rags-to-riches story. He got into the real estate business in college, and he has just developed a great company from there. So it's a pleasure to welcome him, and I think you're going to be very inspired by his story. Josh, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thanks for having me today.
It's good to have you on the show. And since we are personal friends, I appreciate you letting me twist your arm metaphorically to get you on the show.
Anytime, anything for my friends.
And tell your story. So Josh, I mean, you really do have an amazing rags to riches story. I met you probably 4.5, 5 years ago. We were introduced by one of our mutual, I want to say YEO, but really EO, Entrepreneurs Organization friends, Scott Fritz. You were just starting out then, and you really had nothing in terms of any business success, and then you just grew so quickly. I've been so impressed with your story. Tell the listeners a little bit about it and how they can emulate it and what they can learn from it.
Yeah, and I'd like to, first say how we met is Entrepreneurs Organization. And I would not be here today if it wasn't for Entrepreneurs Organization and the ability to meet folks like you and Scott Fritz. So my story, and I like to think that I kind of sped things up, had a lot to do with learning from very successful people at a young age, like you, like Scott Fritz. And so I'll take you back to college. I was deciding where to go to school. And if you live in Arizona or know the rivalry in Arizona, there's U of A down in Tucson and Arizona State. My dad went to U of A, had a full ride there. But as you know, U of A is in Tucson, which is not exactly the best long-term job market if you, want a white-collar career long-term and move up the corporate ladder, so to speak. And so I decided to stay and attend Arizona State, which created a little animosity between my dad and I, but we got over that. And the other thing is I was working as a supervisor at In-N-Out Burger. And for those of you that are In-N-Out freaks, In-N-Out pays, and as a high school going into freshman year of college, I was a supervisor making the equivalent of about $16 an hour, which, I was a rich college kid going into college.
That's pretty good when everybody's arguing about $15 an hour minimum wage, and it's much lower than that in Arizona. But you were literally a burger flipper. I did not know this.
Yes. And so, one of my things is I believe everyone should work in fast food or in the restaurant industry at least once in their life. And so I served my time. Going into college, though, I knew that I needed an internship. I knew that knowledge is power, and not knowledge reading a book, taking a test, but knowledge in the workplace. And so I set out from the first day of class to find an internship. And utilizing my networks, I was able to get an internship at a commercial real estate development company that had a principal working out of his house and commuting back and forth to the Midwest to the corporate office. He got tired of traveling. He had met somebody. He wanted to kind of settle down. And so he decided he was going to open an office, and he needed an intern, put together computers, run errands, answer the phone. I started my first day, the first month, I was putting together computers, printers, going to Costco, getting the water, water machine set up. And I'll never forget it. There was a day where all of a sudden he's like, hey, can you figure this out? And he handed me a stack of papers, and it was to bid a multi-million dollar shopping center project that we were developing. And I had no clue what to do, but I just started kind of figuring out and asking questions and making calls. And literally, my first day of work was April Fool's Day, no kidding, and of my freshman year of college. And I got it. I picked it up. I learned it. I breathed it. I ate it. I slept it. And I learned the business. And so I started attending. I got to start doing some leasing of commercial real estate shopping centers, just picking up the phone book and dialing numbers, you know, following what the president had, you know, said, hey, do this, do that. And over the course of the next 4 years through college, you know, my junior year of college, I was literally on a plane every week. I think I was a platinum frequent flyer on, I think it was America West, or it just become US Airways at that point. So I learned the whole business. I was attending conferences. And by the time I graduated, I had done, you know, dozens and dozens of deals, built dozens of shopping centers. And I really had a leg up when my peers were just graduating and figuring out what they were going to do. And then continued to work for this company for a couple more years. And then I decided one day that, hey, this was, you know, 2010. And as a lot of us know, the economy, even though we had avoided a depression, it still was bad. And somebody told me, hey, you know, Bill Gates started his company in a recession. And I said, well, got to thinking, you know, now's the time to do it. I don't have a wife. I don't have kids. I have really nothing to lose. My parents live in town. I guess I could move back into their house if all else fails. And so 5 years ago, or almost six now, in August of 2010, I started my own company and walked into an office. I leveraged my network, and somebody gave me an office for a few months to use. And I was able to get going and just figured out what I needed to get done.
That's amazing. So what did you do first? I mean, were you basically being a broker when you say opened your own office, just looking for listings and looking to represent tenants? By the way, we should tell the audience, you focus on retail properties. Is that correct?
Yes, we only do retail properties. And that's a great question, Jason. I mean, when you first start off and you have literally nothing, you do anything. Yeah. And so I tried to be strategic with it. Initially, and you know, what I'll get to is that, you know, I started off doing kind of anything. I had some landlord listings, but not very many. I mainly focused on tenant listings and finding those development deals, you know. And so I spent the first few weeks, month, calling everyone I knew, everyone I had done business with, and telling them what I was up to, going and having coffee, going and having lunch, getting involved with programs like ICSC, which is the shopping center convention, but not just getting involved. Becoming on their leadership team, volunteering to help out to put stuff together. And then through EO, I was working on becoming a part of Accelerator. And Accelerator is people that do under $1 million in revenue, but over 250. And so I wasn't quite there, but I was starting to work on all of these things because I knew the power of the network, and being able to get my name out there was so important. And so after a couple years, you know, we found our first deal. And so this is 2010. I'm a few years out of college, don't have any real, you know, rap sheet on my own. I don't really have any money. And so getting a loan from a bank was like, they laughed at me.
Right. And let me just make the distinction for the audience. When you say you found your first deal, that was not a brokerage deal. That was a deal in which to invest, right?
Yeah, the first deal to invest using my network, you know, all those calls I had made. It turned out one of a good buddy of mine that we had been friends with and I had stayed in touch with worked with a wireless user, and he said they were looking for a specific location in Iowa in a small market, and there was a building that was available to buy, and he said they would lease it from me if I did so much improvements and I did this. And he kind of went out on a limb with me to some extent. And so we put the building under contract, got the deal approved with the tenant. And then I was like, oh, well, now I need, you know, I think it was $1 million or $1.2 million. I need $1.2 million. What am I going to do?
Was that the total price of the deal, $1.2 million?
Yep. The total investment was $1.2 million. And this is 2010. Nobody wants to give anybody any money right now.
Right. Everybody's scared. Even if you,
everyone was scared. And so I could have gone, you know, potentially gone to some of my friends that said, hey, you know, invest in the deal as an equity person, an equity investment, meaning I would have to give them half of the deal, or I could find somebody that might loan me the money and potentially help make a lot more money. And so I went out and raised the $1.2 million through a hard money loan. At that time, I think I was paying about 12 or 14% with fees in 2010 for a hard money loan. We had it for 6 months. And then 6 months later, we owned it for 6 months. 6 months later, I sold the building to an investor and, you know, obviously paid back my hard money lenders in full, made some money, and then just found another deal. And because they really, the cell phone guys liked the business that we did, we found another deal. And slowly, all this stuff started happening. And we started to build on our network and build on our accomplishments.
Okay. And wait a second. Hang on. So on that first deal, I just want to make sure we get all that down for the listeners. You got a hard money loan. You needed $1.2 million to finance the project. And was the hard money loan for the entire amount, or did you have some money in the deal?
I didn't have any money in the deal. I had no money. I mean, like, I literally didn't have enough money to put any money down. So I had to convince them to just trust in me and not require any money to be put in on my own behalf.
And who's them, the seller or the tenant?
The investors for the hard money loan.
Oh, the investors for the hard money loan.
Yeah.
Okay. So the financing.
So they gave
people.
Me 100% financing on my project.
Okay. So they must have felt that project would appraise for more than it did, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So they felt there was some equity in the deal. And how much did you sell it for 6 months later?
We netted out about a $200,000 profit in 6 months.
Okay, so probably $1.5 million, some closing costs, in and out, and so forth, somewhere around there. When you say we, did you have a partner in your business, or was it just you?
No, and so this is, you know, when it comes to, you know, taking, remember I talked about, hey, you got to do the best you can with what you have. Well, at the time, my mom, you know, was a residential real estate agent, and she offered to volunteer to help me a couple days a week for free. And so she would come in the office 2 days a week, answer the phones, maybe, you know, do some receptionist work, do some accounting stuff. And so I had her. And when I say we, there was no partner, but there was her and me in the office, which was a very unique opportunity to work together. And to this day, now 6 years, we still work together.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, so you got your first deal done. When you said the cell phone people, were those the tenants?
Yes, they were the tenant that signed a long-term lease for the building.
And that increased the value of the building.
Right? The building. So we bought a vacant building for X, you know, and I don't remember the purchase price. We made some improvements to the building, like a new roof, you know, finished out the interior, brought the bathrooms up to code, did a new parking lot. The tenant signed a 10-year lease. And so we were able to capitalize that lease. So at the time, cap rates, you know, obviously cap rates have compressed over the last 6 years, but we sold this deal, I think, at about an 8 or an 8.25. And to put it into perspective, it would probably sell in the low sixes or mid sixes today.
Wow.
So
yeah.
Huge compression over the last 6 years.
By the way, listeners, this is going to play on multiple shows. So on my commercial investing show, everybody knows what you're talking about. But on some of the other shows, they may not totally intuitively know what you mean by cap rate compression. So what that basically means is that the prices of the properties went up. And the rents lag. They always lag, whether it be residential or commercial. At least I've found that rents always lag price appreciation. And so you see the cap rates go down because of that. Josh, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's the perfect explanation of cap rates.
Okay. Maybe just quickly give us what happened next. Like, what was your next deal? And at all this time, you're doing some brokerage business, right?
Yeah, and that's really where the next part evolves to is we're doing some brokerage business. I also, and I'll just quickly get off to get to the point, is I also had invested in a technology company, which I like to say was the best mistake I've ever made.
And that was was your telecom business, right?
Yeah, I had an opportunity to invest in a hosted VoIP, voice over internet protocol, same technology behind Skype, but basically is for the office. It's the little phones at your desk. Instead of working through a traditional phone line, they work over the internet. And so I had this great opportunity. I thought this would be great. I thought I'd be a serial entrepreneur and I could run all these companies and do all these things. Boy, I could do all these things, but you don't do anything well if you're doing all those things. And so what kind of happened is I grew the telecom company, but at the expense of not growing my real estate business as much. And so a few years ago, it kind of dawned on me that this doesn't make sense, the machine gun versus the shotgun approach. You know, I need to refocus and do one thing really, really well. And so we went on a campaign. We sold our technology company to a publicly traded VoIP company.
We is just you, right?
The telecom company, I had two other partners. And so we were able to, you know, that business was great, but it was hyper competitive. And also it was getting to the point where your margins started to get squeezed because it was becoming commoditized. And I knew that long term, it just did not make sense to be in a market where you're going to get squeezed. And all that's going to matter is pricing. And that's, you know, you see the cell phone business going into that today. And I kind of saw the writing on the wall, even though there's great opportunity. If you didn't have massive amounts of VC money, that wouldn't work. And my business philosophy is I want to build it. I want to control it. And so we decided to sell. It was a great opportunity. We got a great multiple. On the brokerage and development side on my real estate business, though, the brokerage, I realized that I needed to be just a development company. It's very hard. A lot of our business comes through our network, which our network is other developers, it's brokers, it's tenants. And when you are competing with other brokers, if you're doing what we call tenant rep work, where that means you're representing the tenant when they go to lease space and the landlord pays you a commission, it's very hard for me to go to other brokers in the market that do similar work and say, hey, let me help you develop for your tenants when I'm trying to do the same thing. And so going back to the focus approach, we decided, hey, let's refocus. We're only going to do development. And since then, we went from doing a couple deals a year, and then we kind of have doubled every year to the point where this year we'll develop about 40 projects valued at about $120 million in new construction. We have 17 full-time people, in-house legal, development. And so it's been a really cool ride the last few years to see what focus can do for a business and an individual.
It really is. Okay, so how did you scale up so quickly, though? You know, going from your first couple of deals, your telecom company, did the telecom company, the sale of that, give you a lot of capital with which to buy more projects to redevelop? And just so the listeners know, when you say developing these projects or doing these projects even, what do you mean? Is it different in every case? Are you rehabbing properties? Are you doing teardown and building something completely new and dealing with all the developer headaches and opportunities? Or what are you doing?
Well, so when we do a development, I'd say the majority is ground up. So we're actually building something. We do a lot of rehab projects. I would say the split is probably 70, 30, or 80, 20, 80% ground up, 20% utilize existing. It really just depends on the market and the opportunity. When we're developing in a small town, there's usually not a lot of vacant buildings or existing properties to utilize. So a lot of it's ground up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any particular, you know, just quickie advice you have for people on looking for that deal, finding that deal, doing that deal, whatever?
You know, I am the biggest, and obviously you're in real estate, so you see, real estate is one of the greatest things there is out there. It does not get affected by the wind, you know, which way the wind's blowing, you know, what's happening today in the news, whereas the stock market will drop 20%. You know, as you've seen this year, it's been a roller coaster already. Real estate is an asset that you can touch, you can control, and it appreciates in value over time. I would say, you know, my biggest thing for when I evaluate a deal is, you know, where is the business model going of that? You know, today, the retail business in our case is getting reinvented by the day. I mean, concepts
because
that,
of internet shopping,
because of the internet shopping. Yeah. And so, you know, we have to focus on things that are hard to replicate on the internet. Last time I checked, and at least I don't see any kind of technology of how you're going to get your hair cut on the internet or how you're going to eat dinner on the internet. You know, there's certain things that people still need to do. You know, if we don't have any shopping, what do we do on the weekends? I mean, people like to go to the mall. They like that social experience. And so don't freak out that, oh, all this real estate's going to go. It's going to change. And so I think it's important that obviously you're picking concepts that they are part of that internet concept. They're going to be part of the change as the internet evolves. And then the second part is location, location, location. And I can't stress that enough. Get good located real estate. It doesn't matter, though, if it's in a small town or a big town, but pick good real estate.
Within that submarket, that neighborhood. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, Josh, tell us about the changes with the internet. A lot of retail, instead of just being strictly shopping as it used to be, is now sort of retail entertainment. Like you said, it's the things people can't do online. They can't eat dinner online. They can't get their hair cut online. I cite in my old hometown, the Irvine Spectrum in Orange County, California, as one of the first major developments in that direction. I know people from all over the country, maybe all over the world, looked at that as this sort of, you know, they've got shopping, but it's not really hinged on shopping. It's very much a destination for entertainment and maybe impulsive shopping to some extent. You know, like, hey, let's go to the movies, let's have dinner. Oh, and you know, let's go pick something up at this store here that looks good in the window, rather than the big box type of center and the strip mall that was really just dedicated toward shopping. To help ferret that out for the listeners, because I think this is a really interesting trend that is affecting so much of society.
Yeah, I would say in like, you know, Irvine is one of the spectrum, and I know exactly, you know, that center is an amazing case study, but it's one of those that you can't really say, you can't put in every market and compare it to, because you have folks that travel from Newport and Orange County have such a huge population that's hails from Asia. And so you get a ton of people traveling there that they buy stuff up and they go shopping. They even have at Irvine Spectrum, I was reading an article that they have translators for Mandarin.
And so they, that people they have can buses have that bring them in too.
Yes,
yeah.
That bring them in. And so, but what we were seeing like with those centers is a focus on the new anchor is no longer a Nordstrom's as much as, you know, Neiman Marcus or a Dillard's or a Macy's. The new anchor, which is the retailer that brings traffic, you know, it's the destination. They become entertainment uses. You've seen Topgolf. You've seen movie theaters. You've seen restaurants and bars and entertainment become such much more prolific and becoming these anchors for these centers. And so that's what's really driving people to the center. They come, they go have a cup of coffee, they go walk around. And so you're seeing just this evolution into not as much of retail. And what's happening, a lot of these retailers like Best Buy or Staples, they're shrinking their footprints. So they're giving up, and we haven't seen them give up space, so to speak.
They're doing the smaller stores though, right?
They're just doing, going forward, they're doing smaller stores, which means there's more room in shopping centers for other entertainment uses.
Yeah, very good. Well, Josh, there's so much more to talk about. I want to have you back on the show to talk about analyzing deals, maybe dedicate a whole show to that. Also, maybe talk about the economy and how investors should react to things as our crazy economic world unfolds. But in the meantime, please give out your website. Tell people where they can learn more about you.
Yeah, learn more about us at simoncre.com, Simon Commercial Real Estate, CRE.com.
That's Josh Simon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
Here's your chance to catch up on all of those Creating Wealth shows that you've missed. There's a 3-book set with shows 1 through 60, all digital download. You save $94 by buying this 3-book set. Go ahead and get these advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.